Welcome to Bellwether Fronds, definitely not the first podcast featuring a discussion of plant life and why we think you should like what we like. You should trust us, because we're librarians. I'm Anna, and I grow lemons in the pantry.
I'm Aline, and I have a green thumb.
Every couple of weeks, we will get together and chat about a flowery topic or two, what we think, and how we feel. We'll end the show with our current obsessions. This is episode number 247. Spring is here!
Yay!
I know that we've covered this topic every year on Bellwether Fronds.
For the last several years, at least.
Right. But I feel like it's always worth revisiting because the winter, especially in New England, is so long.
And cold. It's not just that it's long, it's cold.
And there's like 7 months of it.
Give or take.
So, spring in New England is about 2 weeks long, max. So we have to seize the moment while we're here and talk about a couple of things. So, what I wanted to talk about first is flower color rankings.
Oh, okay.
I wanted to see if your rankings had changed at all as far as what is your preferred flower color and what is your least preferred flower color.
My number one preferred flower color is white.
Really? That's not a color. Or is it all colors?
White is all colors. Black is the absence of color.
So basically you're not picking anything at all.
Well, you may be right. There are things that I really love that are white, like Shasta daisies, okay, which have a yellow center, acknowledge. I really love a low ground cover type of thing called candy tuft, which is grown in rock walls in my homeland and is usually paired with Lithodora, which is a deep, deep blue. And I love the blue and white combination. The color families that I like in flowers tend to be cool. I like my purples, I like my blues, I like my pinks, I like my reds, and then I see my enthusiasm fading as we move into the oranges and peaches and yellows.
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing with you.
So how about yours?
We're mostly in accord on this, although I do like just a generic narcissus.
Okay, the yellow.
Of extreme yellowness.
Okay, and I love what they represent.
People staring into ponds, admiring their own reflections.
And then drowning, yes. Yeah. I come from a land that has a longer spring than New England. You already referenced the two-week span of spring in New England, and in the Pacific Northwest, you have about 12 weeks of staggered two-week things, where you've got your 2 weeks of crocuses, and you've got your 2 weeks of daffodils, and you've got your 2 weeks of tulips, and then things start to really come in, and you've got a couple of weeks of plum blossoms and cherry blossoms, and everything sprawls out over a great length of time. So, that is a bit of my color ranking. You said we were in accord, and you depart in terms of a narcissus, what else?
So, at the top of my color ranking is still purple.
Purple.
The purple iris, to be specific, but purple in general across the board, which is maybe why I like a yellow daffodil, as they are complementary colors.
They really are. If you've got a nice cluster of crocuses, you often have some yellow and some purple.
I do love a crocus, and when I see, as I can right now in our side yard, a batch of happy crocuses welcoming spring, pending the next snowstorm here in April. My heart is gladdened. I'm so happy. Harbingers of spring. I don't like the white ones as much as I like the purple ones. If we had only white crocuses, I would be like,
And I think that I don't like only white, and I wouldn't really like white crocuses by themselves in the dead flower bed of winter.
Yeah.
I love the white against the lush backdrop of green, as I am accustomed to.
What is your position on a variegated flower? Like, some of our crocuses are like
stripedy.
Right.
I like, here is where I depart from my color preferences, because I love a splotchety red and yellow tulip.
Yeah, you do.
I think they're beautiful. And tulip is my favorite flower. I will tell you right up front that may later be on the list of questions, but a tulip is my favorite flower, and my preferred color of tulip is a purplish pink that is basically their faded dark purple one after several seasons.
Yeah, I'm fine with them.
And yet, when we are at the bulb show, those splotchety red and yellow ones just...
They just get you. I've noticed. They get me. I would like to mention, in case anyone doesn't know that these things happen, but sometimes there's a show of people's bulbs, and you can go in the end of winter and see all the flowers that are forthcoming. Our local one is held at the Smith College, but it's possible that you might have a bulb show near you.
In Seattle, there's an extraordinarily huge Northwest flower and garden show.
Perfect.
That is more than that. And then if you live in a place that has a conservatory or maybe has a college with some botany or something, you may have a smaller version available to you. Or maybe you just go to Trader Joe's and get your $2.49 tiny pot of tiny narcissus and put it on your desk like my boss did.
I know we covered this in episode 95, but if there was a plant that you were able to grow in your native land, that you could grow here without it. Let's pretend the temperature zones don't exist. Like, I know you had a banana tree in your yard.
I did.
So is there a plant that grows there, that doesn't grow here, that you're like, oh, I wish we could have that here?
In terms of the temperate zones, I would probably want a New Zealand tree fern, which was what my banana tree approximated for me. For some reason, my landscape designer went with the banana tree instead of the New Zealand tree fern, but they were of about the same proportion and structure, and I really like them. They're kind of a little bit of a palm tree, but they're only as tall as you. They're cool looking.
I'm for it.
And that's not native to the Pacific Northwest, but it is temperate to it. You can grow a lot of New Zealand plants in the Pacific Northwest. What about you?
Well, so I know that people can grow columbine here.
Right.
But it's much more often seen where I come from, especially like in my grandmother's garden in the mountains over Boulder, like columbine everywhere.
My mom had columbine in her garden.
Right. So that's like a thing that says, oh, that's home. And also, you know, you can go hiking in the mountains and see like forget-me-nots just in the wild.
I had so many forget-me-nots in my garden.
I haven't, I mean,
do they have
I don't
them here?
Know if we can plant them here.
I don't either.
We should look into that.
We should. I like grape hyacinths.
And I cannot lie.
They're adorable. When I worked with my garden at my other house, I had an interest in native plants because they grow without needing water and without needing a lot of cultivation. If you are working with the native plants of your region, you will have a successful and happy garden. And some people call native plants weeds, depending on your gardening goals. And I had a lot of luck with them and I appreciated them. So having some trillium under your cedars in your backyard or having some Oregon grape sprawling around under
your trees.
I don't
even know what Oregon grape looks like.
It's also called salal?
Nope.
Well, there's lots of foresty things.
What about Oregon grape?
No. Oregon girl?
This is a question that is designed to get my answer out of me, but what is your favorite flowering tree?
I'm so glad you asked. I have really enjoyed the white fluffiness of an ornamental plum. They are rife in the Seattle area.
Yeah, we have one in Salt Lake.
People have them in the front yard. They put them in the parking strip. And I also love an ornamental cherry. I like the ones that have enough pink on them to look pink. Most of the blossoms are pretty white with like a pink edge to them, maybe. And I like the ones on the pink end of things, of course.
Well, so do
I. So tell me, Anna, please tell me about your favorite flowering tree.
My favorite is a dogwood. A pink one.
A specific pink dogwood.
Just down the road from our house. Well, I would like it to be in our yard, but I don't see how I can transplant it. It's pretty big.
It's really big.
But I do wave at it as I go by.
I cannot wait for it to bloom. I'm ready for it to bloom this year. The last couple of years, I thought, oh, hey, the dogwood is blooming. And this year, I'm like, is it blooming yet?
There is also a block and a half away from here, a really fabulous magnolia tree.
It's the wrong direction. We don't drive by it on our way out of the house.
I know, but we have to make a special trip or possibly take a walk.
What?
And I do kind of like a magnolia as being like just a super unwieldy entire giant flower or 100 of them on one tree.
Yes. So, did you have in your youth or in your adult life an interval where you did some annual type planting. Like, I had these pots on my front walk where when it started to warm up, I would toddle off to Home Depot and buy some primroses and a verbena, and I would just plant them, and I would have these, like, little profusions. It would, you know, like, a foot-wide flower bed.
How old are we talking?
Super, in your life. Like, it was a thing my mom did when I was growing up, and then I did it a few years as a grown-up, but I didn't do it when I was in college or when I was living in a big city.
So, as you know, usually every year I go get some pansies and I plant them in front of our porch just for a little color. But we didn't really, my dad or mom would sometimes go to a plant sale and come back with a vast array of plants, but I don't feel like I was looped in on that. I remember going to the plant store and buying these like very colorful plants that are very soft to the touch.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget what they're called, but they're, like, really bright. And I planted them, and they promptly died. And so, I don't know if that put me off of...
I don't know. Before I redesigned my garden, when I was just poking around and trying to make it better on my own, friend of the podcast and beloved author, Kelly, would take me to plant sales of some of the organizations in the region.
Yeah.
So, like... the botanical garden would have a plant sale, and then the master gardeners would all get together, and they would have all thinned out their gardens and, like, brought everything out,
great.
And you could buy it. And that was really great, because you could get, basically, cuttings that had been cultivated by wonderful people.
And grew already.
And grown already, and were native, and
region,
had been, like,
yeah.
Had been propagating themselves, and so you could go and stick it in your yard, and then in a little while you'd have an awesome plant. And I had really good luck with a flowering currant, which is like my native plant triumph of my past.
This is great. I want to talk for a second before we move to our other topic about my plant nemesis. I don't know if you have a plant nemesis or have had a plant nemesis, but I have one every year. I do battle with this plant. And every year it comes out as a draw, I think. I'm not sure yet.
The house is still standing.
The plant
is still standing. So I think it may be a draw.
So every year the wisteria attempts to take over the house, and every year I cut it back. And then we start the cycle over again. And it does have nice purple blossoms when it is blooming.
And I completely missed its blooming at least one of the springs I've been here.
Like, purple? What? And it has fascinating velvety giant seed pods as well.
Yeah. But I love the way a wisteria looks, but having lived with a wisteria, I do not love a wisteria.
I have lived with a wisteria at least since I was 6. I mean, not during college or then, but when I've lived in houses, I've had a wisteria. So, like, I don't understand what it's like not to have one that's trying to take over your backyard. Or tear your house down. It seems like it's an essential part of home ownership.
So Kelly was my garden consultant prior to my hiring of a landscape designer.
And she said, don't ever put a wisteria
in. And she disallowed wisteria. Every time I would admire them, she would pull over the car and she would sit.
She would be like,
and
Ellie.
Let me look at it as long as I wanted to. And she would say, you can never have a wisteria.
They are...
Insidious.
That's a good word. So I dug out the garden bed in the back, right behind the laundry room, and replanted it. But in the process, I discovered that the wisteria is even more insidious under the ground as it is up above. So it's probably coming at us from, it's like there's a net of roots around the entire foundation of the house, and someday we'll be swallowed whole.
Probably. I think we saw a movie like that once.
We did. Or an X-Files episode.
So... we have talked about outside plants some. Are we moving to inside plants?
I thought we would cover that next episode.
Okay, we can do that. Making sure to cover the rest of the outside plants.
Oh, we didn't talk about lilacs.
We love lilacs. We bought a lilac
last
year and planted it, and it appears to have survived the winter, so we are excited about that. We don't do much in the way of vegetable gardening. We are not against the idea. We put in some basil last year, and something came and ate it in the night, and we don't know who.
I hope that my raspberry plant survived the winter, but I haven't
checked it for bugs.
Checked it.
Yeah.
And the lavender that we planted, I'm not sure it's alive either.
Right.
So.
We might have to try again with the lavender. I had a rose once upon a time that was a semi-wild rose, and gardeners among you will know that roses are in the same family as the blackberry, which means a rose can go bananas and take over the world, or it can get black spot and languish and be unhappy forever. They are temperamental ladies, our roses, and if you can find a hardy rose, that's the technical gardening term, that will grow where you live, I recommend them. They're wonderful. They smell good. They're beautiful.
I had a peace rose and in the back garden, and every time it grew the tiniest green thing, something would eat it.
What comes and eats things here?
I don't know. Maybe we need a secret camera.
There's no evidence of
There's no deer.
Slugs.
I don't
there are
think.
No deer. There might be bunnies, but we've not
there
seen them
bunnies.
In our road, you
yes.
know?
Well, we've seen them in our front yard.
We have?
Yes.
Oh, well then it's bunnies.
Okay.
I didn't know that bunnies ate basil.
Well, I don't know either. So, but we do have a kind of, I don't know what you would call it, old-fashioned rose that's on by the driveway, which I appreciate.
An heirloom rose.
An heirloom rose, which I appreciate because sometimes in October there is still one rose blooming on it. It's like hanging in there, a la the song, The Last Rose of Summer.
I had a yellow rose planted in my redesigned garden that went through to December.
Nice.
It's on Instagram. You can see a picture of it. There was this like fat yellow rose on like December 7th one year. And I was like, dude, it's almost Christmas.
Pack it in. So our other topic was trees in pop culture. I know that we don't usually stray into pop culture when we're talking about plants.
No, this podcast has nothing to do with pop culture.
So
it does have to do with pod culture.
Pod culture. This is good. I like it. We should use that next time. So do you have a favorite tree in pop culture?
Well, I do love the Whomping Willow.
Who
with
doesn't?
All of my heart. I identify with the Whomping Willow.
Well, it's the same spirit that animates the wisteria, I'm pretty sure.
And it's animated.
Right.
In terms of smacking anyone who comes near, which I can get behind. And you? Do you have a favorite tree?
I mean, I really love the Ents in Lord of the Rings, especially when they destroy Saruman's...
Or is it Sauron?
No, it's... You can tell that we only care about plants here.
We don't know anything about pop culture.
Especially when they destroy Saruman's logging / orc generating operation. It makes me very happy. I am sorry that they lost the Ent wives, but they're pretty cool.
The Ents are pretty cool.
I think we made it to the end of the show. Time really flies when you're talking about plants.
So, Anna, do you have a musical obsession?
I do. It's a song by the Proclaimers called Come On Nature. And it's not actually about nature, it's about Gather Ye Rosebuds, I'm pretty sure. But that's also about nature, so it all works out.
Sowing wild oats and such?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. Well, my musical obsession is from the Singles soundtrack. Yay, yo, 90s! It's called Nearly Lost You, and it's by the Screaming Trees.
Oh, I love it. That's
right?
Great. Do you have a regular obsession?
Of course I have a regular obsession. You know, in spite of being only interested in plants, occasionally I go see a movie, and there was an animated short in 1987 called The Man Who Planted Trees. And it might have won the Academy Award, or it might just have been nominated for an Academy Award, but what I love about it and what obsesses me about it to this day is that I remember it as being one of my earliest sort of arty, filmy experience kinds of things. I saw it as part of a presentation of many animated shorts, and it stood out as meaningful, and then it was nominated for awards.
So you would have been 17?
16.
16, okay.
Yeah.
And I would have been...
10.
6. No.
So, yeah.
My obsession is a long-standing obsession. It's one of my favorite pieces of poetry. Roll your eyes. Go ahead.
Oh, a poem.
A poem. It's called Lines composed a few miles above Tintern Abbey on revisiting the banks of the Wye during a tour, July 13, 1798.
That's a little early for your usual tastes.
Not for my taste in classical music.
Right.
It's by William Wordsworth, and it is all about the natures. My favorite part, which I've carried around with me for a long time, because I'm a dork. No,
you're the kind of person who carries a piece of poetry around with you.
Yes. Thanks.
You are poetical.
So, here it is.
An excerpt, if you will.
An excerpt from a very long poem. I'm not going to read the whole thing. Maybe next time. Therefore, am I still a lover of the meadows and the woods and mountains, and of all that we behold from this green earth, of all the mighty world of eye and ear, both what they half create and what perceive, well pleased to recognize in nature and the language of the sense, the anchor of my purest thoughts, the nurse, the guide, the guardian of my heart and soul, of all my moral being.
That's lovely.
Right?
Thank you for sharing it with us.
You're welcome. It, is the closest thing I have to believing in things that I can't see or confirm.
It's good to have something like that.
Right. Thanks for joining us. You cannot find us on Twitter. We don't believe in that.
You can find us out in the garden with our hands in the dirt.
Right. We're so happy that spring is here, and we're happy that you're here to join us. Bye.
Bye-bye.